Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. We're going to try a cold intro here. Kirk, let's hopefully Diane keeps the first part in here. I was just thinking of that article you wrote some years ago about the hole in the bathtub curve. And I was talking to Carl, I think, about the bathtub curve in one of just a recent episode, and how it's portrayed to look like a bathtub, and you know, it really isn't. And I think your point was that we don't use products long enough. Some products, you know, like you, I think the cell phone is an example where our car, I think GM and others figured out early on that if you don't buy a new car every couple of years, then they don't make as much money. And so they made them with fins. Now you got to have the ones with the fins on it, or you have to have the 320C because the 320 is just too old now, you know, and all of these other things that are marketing in order. The car's perfectly fine.
Right.
You know, it gets you from here to there and does everything. But now they have power windows. You don't want one of those old cars with a crank handle on it. Half of our audience going, they used to have a crank on the window? Yeah. Yes.
So, sometimes that's marketing creating demand. Right. And it may not.
So there's part of that. That's one track. And I think part of it was that as technology of a device improves and gets new features and stuff, it deliberately obsoletes the old ones. And we see that especially with smartphones where the software is not compatible anymore. And it's so you can't use the latest software.
You can't
do the upgrades, the security things, support, everything else goes out. Now there's another version of this though, and it made me think, I don't remember the last time I had a call on my phone. Because I get so many, I get dozens and dozens per day of something about my student loan debt, which I haven't been in college. I didn't have any student loans. Fundraisers and political surveys and just somebody wants to put gutters on my house.
Technology has helped you there. Fred, you've got to set up filters on your phone.
Oh, I do. I got it on there all the time. But
I've got a spam filter, and it almost rarely. I mean, I get a call. It doesn't ring my phone. It gives me a message that this number called. It shows Austin, Texas, which I don't live in anymore, even though my phone area code is 512. Yeah. They spoof the number, so it looks like it's what they think is a local call for me. And, you know, it doesn't even ring. I don't pick it up. It just leaves a thing. And I believe those people that call in or that spoof or that's really automated and I get the end of a message, they'll leave a voicemail. And that's why I rarely, sometimes.
If I'm not expecting a phone call, if like it said, hey, Kirk, let's chat at 10 o'clock and you're going to give me a call, I'll watch my phone because the ringer's turned off. It's not just the spam filter. The spam filter doesn't catch enough of them. I probably get 25 spam a day and 10 of them still ring.
I know one of the settings, at least with an Apple phone, is that you can set on the VIP or your favorites phone numbers. And I have
don't tell
only
Diane
about
that.
Five. Okay.
Yeah, don't tell
that.
Diane.
Okay. It will ring through even if your ringer is off.
Yeah.
And the time. Okay. And I have it.
Am I on that list?
My phone automatically goes off at night as far as ringing.
Yeah. There's a do not
disturb. I set a sleep function.
Yeah, there's the sleep function. There's all kinds of cool stuff.
It will record. Right. So
My point isn't how to fix that. It isn't how to fix that. It's just that I don't get that many calls that I actually want to be on the phone with, right? And it used to be when I went back, I had a headset that was battery powered, and I was on phone calls when I worked at HP 6 hours a day minimum. It was always a teleconference, and that was kind of the big thing. We could do teleconferences, but it was through a phone system. It was, you know, 800 numbers and something like that. And then eventually they got moved over to voice over IP. Right. And now And we were talking about it earlier, is that most of our engagements with clients or with people that we're doing work on, like right now, we're on Zoom. And we, right. you and I and other consultants, we get the pleasure of doing team meetings and Zoom and WebEx and GoToMeeting and the 15 other systems that are out there. So right. we're always trying to figure out where's the button for this? You know, how do I share?
Right.
We come across being pretty stupid looking, but we have to deal with right. all kinds of systems.
Right.
So, and then I saw an article just the other day that was saying, you know, the internet really wasn't built to deal with real-time communications. It was to send messages, you know? So if I send an email or I send a file to somebody, you know, if it's off by 2 seconds, nobody notices, right? It's not right. a big deal. But now Zoom, this is breaking up our audio into a bunch of little digital packets and reassembling right. it in right. miraculously crazy fast time. So
it comes out pretty good.
It does.
It comes out with, you know, our voices is sounding like they do. And
well,
and
they so, could make yeah, it better.
You mentioned, you know, how the internet originally designed was really just send these small messages out, you know,
or move a file from one computer. Yeah, a little bit move,
you know, something like that. And the creators of the internet who are still alive today, many of them, couldn't have imagined what technology would lead to
yeah.
as far as the capabilities of watching movies. We're now streaming almost everything, huge amounts of information at huge data rates simultaneously while we're surfing or playing a game on our phone. We're also using those same Wi-Fi connections to feed to, you know, weather report.
Just on and on. It's amazing. Now, so the point is that, well, let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
Years and years and years ago, I got the opportunity to go visit a factory in Mexico mm-hmm. yeah. that was originally designed and built and operated for decades by Bell Phones, not Bell Labs, but Ma Bell, the big phone company before it got mm-hmm. broken up. Mm-hmm. It was the best factory I have ever been in. They did, when they made a circuit board, there was no doubt that it was going to work. It was one after another, and their process control. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember the phone companies, when they first mm-hmm. started selling phones, the rotary dial analog phones.
They didn't sell. They rented you the phone.
That's right. You leased it or rented it.
You didn't own the phone.
But they made sure it worked, because if it didn't work, you weren't going to be making phone calls and paying your bill.
And they would have to replace it, too. They owned
it. Right. They owned it. So they wanted you to have a phone and make it right. work. But they, this famous book, and I'm drawing a complete blank on the name of it, but it was related to process control. How do you make something over and over again and it's consistent? And that was in right. the 20s and 30s, you know, right. time frame when they're doing that. But this factory that I saw in the 90s mm-hmm. had that polished to a T. It just embedded throughout the factory. They learned it all and did it by making rotary phones for decades. And now they were making other circuit boards for other devices and other systems. But with what they didn't lose, they could make anything, I think, because they had such care about getting the process right and doing process improvement. They were just excellent at that.
But Fred, wasn't also another factor the fact that technology wasn't changing that fast? You talked about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Years, no, exactly.
How they were doing the same thing for years and years.
Yeah.
And, of course, today, and with, you know, technology has increased the change in technological improvement and features. I mean, the fact that we have better CAD systems because we have better computers make better computers. Oh, and yeah. make better phones and make better.
I don't know that it makes it better or not. Just because I can do a CAD and make this goofy, flowy case around the outside of it, or a phone that I can't possibly pick up without dropping, you know, I don't know that that's better.
Well, you can do it a lot faster. Let's say you can do a design on your you know, using reference designs or whatever. You can do things, you can make a significant increase. I mean, it's just a much faster change rate. And right. that in itself affects the quality and reliability of a product. If you're making the same, you know,
oh, you're doing the same thing over and over, you can get really good at it.
Yeah, because you should have feedback from the field and know what breaks.
But you and I have both been in places where they make the same thing over and over again, and they blame the customer and they ignore all the failures. That's a different topic.
Yeah.
So right. the reason I bring up the rotary phone okay. guys is that phone calls have been around for a century, right?
Yes.
But now we're using Zoom and associated stuff. If I don't get a voicemail, I don't pick up the, you know, I don't return your call because I get so many right. junk ones. I'm thinking right. that the nature of our technology is that we still want to communicate. I don't think that's obsolete.
No, now we have lots of options.
We have lots of options. And I think the old we have a rotary lot phone options. Is gone. I don't even think they work anymore. I don't think you could put a rotary no. phone on the line.
I think if you plug one in, if you have a wired plug in your house, which I don't, I do for my DSL.
Yeah.
For my DSL, I receive it through the old copper line yeah. system in my house. But that's the only way I receive phone calls the only way I receive is wirelessly. The only phone I have is my cell phone.
Yeah. So we have a backup because where we live is that the power goes out long enough, the backup power for the cell towers fails also. And
yeah,
and so cells go down. And okay. so we have an analog, even with the power out in the house, the old fashioned low voltage copper wire phone system.
Right.
You need a
right.
phone that actually works with it. So we have a little push button thing. It's not a rotary, but it's one step up from that. But it's nothing fancy on it. And so if it doesn't have an answer machine on it or anything else. And so if the power goes out, Diane just unplugs the fancy phone that does voice messaging and all the other happy stuff and call waiting and has 400 buttons we never use and plugs in the old standby phone. And now we can call 911 if we need to. Because...
Right.
Eventually our cells, now depending on where you live, you know, and how systems are routed and powered and everything else, cell systems are getting better and better all the time.
Right.
But it's, my point is that I think at some point.
And the old system could have failed too.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely.
I mean, the fact that, right.
The lines yeah. of the power.
Now AT&T had their own power source, but those could have failed.
Oh, if wires go down.
Considering what happened in Texas last year or whatever when they had the deep freeze.
Oh, that was all Texas' fault.
Everything was failing, you know. Yeah. And there was no power anywhere. So, yeah, to a point, you're right. That was kind of a redundancy system that you had, an alternative technology to use in case of one fail. But both of them could fail.
Oh, they both could, and for a variety of reasons. But I think the idea here, my underlying point, is that the function of communicating with people at a distance, you know, rotary phones and then electronic phones and then now voice over IP and all these other fancy systems.
Hey, and we've got, you know, live telecom. I mean, look at what was a fantasy in Dick Tracy comics.
That's
is
right.
now a reality. You can do FaceTiming with anybody on a small phone and see what they're doing. And
yep.
now there are, you know, right now, of course, it's still, and we still have limitations like bandwidth. And I'd still, my internet is not all that fast sometimes mm-hmm. where I do get pauses on streaming services, which is pretty annoying. So, you know, yeah.
Sounds like a first world problem there, Kirk.
Right. Well,
no, but the point is that
you don't get so much of the channel.
When we look at obsolescence and we're looking at the bathtub curve and that
right.
article you wrote some years ago,
right.
part of it is because the technology that provides that service or that feature set that we're interested in is changing
right.
and we want it faster. So if somebody came with a better system for you where it wouldn't annoy you with a pause in the streaming, you know, it's an upgrade. It might be a different technology and some other poor company is going to go out of business because nobody buys their slow stuff anymore.
Right.
Right. That's one form of obsolescence. But I think when we talk about reliability engineering
right.
and one of the new authors on Ascendo does the history of reliability stuff and history of maintenance management.
Okay.
And, you know, people were tracking failures and doing Paretos and doing root cause analysis and making design fixes, you know, in the 17, 1800s. That's documented and probably long before that. But so a lot of what we do in reliability is dealing with the processes to create a reliable product or create a reliable system, to learn from failures, things like that. That I don't think that has really changed a whole lot.
No, that hasn't changed, but the change in technology
requires
requiring much faster assessments of reliability, to be able to quickly know. Now, that's another thing. You know, the product is probably not going to be used as long as some people think it might be because of they don't.
Well, that's what you brought out in your article. Yeah,
right.
That's what you brought out in your article.
Technological change is the reason a lot of products are no longer used and put on a shelf. I have plenty of VCRs in my house, or three, you know, that I haven't used in years, except maybe to transfer to digital.
I watched one the other day. We couldn't find the movie on streaming that other way than having to pay for. And Diane said, "I think we have a tape of that. I think we have a CD of that or a DVD."
Well, right, DVD.
Let's play that.
And I see these Netflix or these Redbox things, and I said, I pull up a one in next to a drugstore, and I said, "That's really getting on the edge of technological obsolescence, because the convenience of just streaming something versus going and picking up and physically delivering back a DVD to this little kiosk is just inefficient."
Yeah.
And people are going to be using that more and more, which is driving, you know. So, you know, like safety issues. You talked about adding fins to a car or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's stylistic changes. But for a lot of people, what drives them for automobiles is the safety issues. The fact that there might be automatic braking or
backup cameras. That's my favorite.
Backup cameras and, lane change. There's all kinds of new improvements in safety, which that would be the reason I would purchase a better car many times, is that improvement. And we talk about, you know, that certainly the manufacturers have to introduce some, and they try to induce a reason to buy, a new system from them, like Apple. Okay, they've got to come out with a new version of a phone. Although, I think a lot of customers, they don't have to, but there's kind of a diminishing point of returns for some of their changes. They didn't make it isn't that significant. Yeah. Like I went from a 6 to an 11. I don't think I missed much with a 10 or. No. You know, six, whatever.
You can play more complex games now, and it'll just be faster.
But now that they are, you know, there's a big gap in the improvement and technological benefit. And I still have the 6S sitting here on my desk. It's perfectly capable. It still works.
Yep.
It's no longer upgraded with software because they can't support every version of their phone. And they eventually say, that's old enough. You've had it long enough. You need to go get a new phone. And in fact, they've had a problem, with the people talking about right to repair and wanting to upgrade. And I'm thinking, in my book, the reason what I've seen is not people aren't getting rid of their replacing their phones because they can't repair them, but they're usually replacing them because there's a technological obsolescence to the old phone. There's some benefits.
And we've talked about this before, is many, many different types of products go through this technological advancement. And at first, it's pretty rapid. So the difference between the first phone and the second phone was pretty big. And the steps get smaller and smaller. Now we're out at, phone 13, I think. And, the camera's a little better.
I think this is true of happening in high definition televisions, that the resolution that they're trying to increase is beyond the capability of a human eye to discern.
But it's good marketing. It's not 4G anymore. It's 5G.
It's 6G. And they're going way beyond our capability. It's just like, we have this amplifier that will, do perfect, 0.00001 total harmonic distortion between 20 hertz and 30,000 hertz. Mm-hmm. Well, sorry, the human hearing can't get past, about 15 hertz for most of it.
The cat's enjoyment, for your dog's enjoyment. Let them hear it. Let them have good sound.
Right. But, you know, this is kind of just trying to say this one's better and, you know, without the public knowing.
I think that drives some of it. Some of it is actually, you know, like you said, the safety stuff where there's a new feature set you can't live without. This is really good. This is worth having. Those kind of things. Untethering ourselves from a cord in the wall for a phone to even just a wireless headset. That was that was pretty cool. Made a difference for me and many other people. But the idea is that underlying that are still practices and processes that are fundamental. Is if you have a failure, you need to understand it. You need to do root cause analysis and figure it out. If you have issues, you got to sort it out and solve it. If you have, you know, the basic stuff that's foundational to our ability to deal with this technology is ever changing because we have so many options and it's moving so fast. Yet the the foundational pieces of what we do and the questions we ask and how do we sort out things. Yeah, we got to go faster. I agree with you on that, Kirk. But I think
absolutely.
But we can't ignore process stability. If you're going to make a million of them, they're going to be variable and you got to pay attention to that. If you're only going to make one, it's hand-built, custom, you can, it's a different story. But the idea is that many of the tools that we use have been around a long, long time. And it pains me that people are thinking, well, statistics is obsolete. We don't need that. We don't have time to do data sampling and stuff. Okay. You're going to do that at your own peril.
It's still applicable, especially when you're mass producing something in the field, you know, like that you don't get a lot of information about. There's a lot of application for that. But this is where I think.
So you know, I'm going to sign you up for that stats course after all. I'm going to send you over the link. It's not too late, Kirk. It's not too late. You can become a statistician too. Odds are, you know, you have a 38% chance of becoming a world-class statistician.
What's the confidence level on that, Fred?
Oh, plus or minus, you know.
I loved your podcast with Chris on confidence and confidence limits.
I mean, there's lots of stuff out there, but it's so anyway, I wanted to bring you up. I was a bunch of different things floating in my mind and I thought, that might make a good discussion. So, if you're listening to this and go see Kirk's article
there is a drain in the bathtub. All bathtubs have drains.
And it's about technological obsolescence, where things like your 6 is still perfectly good, but you're not getting updates anymore.
It's probably not going to wear out for 30 years.
That's right. Until your dog gets on it and chews it up. Exactly. Something like that. Or your daughter, if she's still breaking phones. So anyway, let us know what you think. Check out the article. If you have any comments or questions on that, we'd love you to join the conversation. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And you can leave us a voice message using this WYSIWYG or fancy, not WYSIWYG, whiz bang new technology that's out there, allowing you to leave us a voice message on a browser if you have a microphone. and you can leave a written comment if you have a keyboard or something similar, input device. And you can also find us on LinkedIn. You can find us on our About pages. There's lots of ways for you to join the conversation.
And if you do like our podcast, don't hesitate to share it with your friends or your colleagues and repost, retweet, whatever.
Yeah, we'll try not to embarrass you too much. No, it's a good point. We haven't asked people to share and leave reviews and stuff in a long time. That would be a good thing.
Yeah, that's a way to get the information out to people that you may think are skeptical about, you know. For me, halt and hass or testing to limits, things like that. You can send them one of our podcasts.
There you go. Good idea, Kirk. We'll appreciate that. All right. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Fred. Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Cheers. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know.
You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.